Hello, everyone. It's a pleasure to have you join us once again on Civic Banter, a podcast brought to you by Budget. My name is Nancy Odemego. We're so happy to be on this particular episode. So this is the third episode on the What's Next series. Remember that the What's Next series is actually spotlighting and exploring the next steps, priorities that the new administration should focus on for Nigeria. And on the first episode, we discussed what's next for the economy. And then we went in again with accountability and transparency. And we're here to discuss priorities, health priorities for the incoming administration. I have joining me Dr. Biobele Davidson. Dr. Biobele is the strengthening health systems lead for budget. And she's being joined by Dr. Koye Oyerinde, who's a pediatrician and health policy expert in the United States. Dr. Koye, it's nice to have you join us.
I'm happy to be here, thank you.
All right, thank you so much. Joining Dr. Koye is one of Budget's finest and the strengthening health system lead at Budget, Dr. Biobele Davidson. Hello, Dr. Davidson.
Hello, Nancy. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much. So we're going to delve into the conversation. We're going to be very quick. It's going to be snappy. We're talking about health, right? Nigeria healthcare is not at the best position right now. If you stop someone on the street and ask them, what do you have to say about the healthcare sector in Nigeria? I know that everyone, of course, has two pieces to render and two kobo or 2 cents rather to contribute to, but mostly it's not where it is supposed to be. People are not actually having good healthcare. You find communities that do not have PHCs, or the ones that have PHCs and the PHC looks more like a kiosk. Can you wonder, sorry, is this a PHC, right? And it's disheartening, but it is what it is, and that's where we are as a nation today, which people that actually started policies, people that actually enacted policies way after we did, people that actually enacted reforms way after we did, have gone way ahead of us. Well, we're going to be discussing all of that and more today. But first, let's talk about the assessments. Let's just look at Nigeria from your lens. The healthcare system, healthcare services, what do you think? Where do you think it stands at this point? How would you assess it if you were to talk about it? Yes, let's go with you, Dr. Oyerinde.
Well, I mean, I'd like to start by saying the Nigerian healthcare system is plagued by a number of challenges at the moment. So I'll just list them. I'll say inadequate funding, poor quality of care, I'll say high cost of care, or unequal access across the landscape. So let me dig deeper into those points. Well, if we don't have an adequate funding, then we don't have adequate public health infrastructure. Then it means we can't retain motivated human resources. It means we have inadequate supplies and consumables, okay? And at the moment, Nigeria spends about 3%, 3 to 5% of its GDP on healthcare. Well, that's grossly inadequate. And there's no way we can expect to have quality healthcare services. That's all we spend on healthcare services. Then if you look at poor quality of care, if you don't have the good infrastructure, you don't have the good supplies, and you don't have motivated human resources, then you can't have quality of care. On top of that, there has to be a culture that supports quality of care. There has to be someone looking out for the quality of care that people are receiving. So a kind of surveillance system to measure quality of care people are receiving and intervening when there are problems. There's an inspectorate department in ministries of health. When I used to work in Nigeria, they would come occasionally and just walk through and sometimes just pick up a brown envelope. And that's all their inspection. That's not going to work. If we want quality of care, then we must be serious about what we are doing. You cannot just go and pick up a brown envelope and walk through the clinic and say they're done. Someone needs to do a chat review. Someone needs to do interviews of patients. Someone needs to do serious level data analysis of how many people are coming back for the same illnesses. You know, if you're discharged for asthma, why are you being readmitted the next week? If you are discharged for diabetic coma, why are we seeing you 3 times a year for the same problem? Those are the kinds of surveillance systems that help quality of care. Then, of course, the high cost of care is another problem, right? So if you have to bring money out of your pocket to pay for healthcare, that's a huge problem because nobody keeps money aside waiting for healthcare problem to occur. even those with chronic illnesses, so they already know they're ill, so they have chronic diabetes, so they have to be on insulin. Well, if they have to bring money out of their pocket each time they buy their insulin, then their healthcare needs competes with their other financial demand. So do I pay for my rent or my child's school fees, or do I go and buy insulin? We can't have good quality healthcare, we can't have good health outcomes. That is the way we are paying for healthcare. Then of course you have uneven access to healthcare. If you're in Lagos, in Abuja, maybe in Port Harcourt, there are plenty of doctors everywhere. But if you are in a rural area, the riverine areas, the northern silver savannah grasslands, there are a lot of places that are just empty with no doctors at all. Well, that's not the way we cannot run a good healthcare system if people are not, don't have access, geographical access or even financial access to the health services. So that in a nutshell are the main problems that we face in the healthcare system in Nigeria.
All right, thank you. I love the fact that from the beginning you just went head on and identified the major challenges. And from my understanding, it seems they are all linked. Good infrastructure gives you good quality of care, but then you also need to monitor and evaluate this care, where you measure, you started measuring the care to be sure that, okay, it's adequate and what people are receiving is up to par. All right, thank you for that. I'm also going to come back where we will talk about priorities for this new administration. But I want Dr. Davidson to also speak to the level of healthcare system in Nigeria. Dr. Davidson.
Okay, thank you so much, Nancy. So healthcare in Nigeria, basically, what my take would be on it is it's a crucial part of the existence of any human health services. But looking at the health system over the years, we've seen that the Nigerian healthcare system has evolved. There have been various reforms that have been put in place, with all these reforms being aimed at addressing the challenges confronting the average citizens towards access to healthcare. Dr. Oyerinde has listed a lot of them, and I'm sure with his years of expertise, it's been the same issues which have actually deteriorated over the course of time. But some of these schemes have been put in place, but have they really addressed the problem of the basic Nigerian towards seeking healthcare? Well, that one I'll leave as an open-ended question. But we look at the healthcare system. There've been various articles online, because I recently went online to just do a search. Budget is actually working at strengthening the healthcare system, which is part of our new arm of budget. And over the course of care, we've seen that a lot of places, individuals do not even know services that are being offered at their health facility. Now, this article, which was released in 2019, was very diverse, and it measured indicators or certain metrics, looking at countries like Uganda, looking at countries like Tanzania, looking at countries like Nigeria, trying to have a comparison with them, and we found out that we weren't doing so well. Now, 2019 up to date is a long time, but when you look at some of the pointers that Dr. Koye has raised, you find out that they haven't really changed over the years. So, well, we're evolving as it is as today, but there's still a lot that has to be done in our healthcare.
All right, thank you. At least that's I had hope. We're evolving, but we still have a long way to go. Thank you so much. So now, let's back to Dr. Oyerinde. If you were to prioritize, let's say, 2 to 3 priorities for the new administration, what would you recommend they tackle head on? What would you tell them to prioritize in health? Because we've had instances a few weeks ago, we released a press statement where the total allocation to streetlight was in Nigeria in the 2023 budget, as a matter of fact, was higher than the total allocation to primary health care and schools combined. And so we had reactions of, oh, misplaced priority. What are you powering that streetlight is taking 81.7 billion while schools and PHC combined is not even up to this particular amount? So what would you tell them to prioritize now when, you know, they are disbursing, allocating, in, you know, to raise the standard of health in Nigeria?
Well, one famous adage is that, don't tell me who you are, but show me your budget. Then I'll know what you value. And so the first priority, I think, for this new administration is to secure more funding for the public healthcare system. Without funding, we can't do much. So this is the time when they're new, they need to have a second look at the budget. If they're going to go back to the National Assembly and have a revision of the budget, they need to do it and get more funding for the public healthcare system. Nigeria has a lot of, I call them paper implementation. There are thousands and thousands of lovely, laudable documents that Nigeria has. The National Health Act, I think of 2014, the basic healthcare provision document, the National Health Insurance Scheme, all these things are there on paper, but they don't have any impact on the lives of people on the street. Well, this is the time for them to secure funding to make all those things possible. We don't just want paper implementation, that, oh, we have this document, we tick it off. No. How does the little woman selling her oranges in Ajegunle Market experience the National Health Act? How does the basic healthcare provision fund make a difference to the life of the mechanic in Ibadan? That's the whole point of this document. And so the new government, I think, needs to secure more funding and put people in place who can implement those documents. And when you put people in place, you want to give them timeframes. How do we do this? Well, we need you to get this done in 6 months, in 3 months, whatever the timeframes you want to give them. And if they are not competent, get people who are competent. Nigeria has a lot of competent people, competent civil servants, competent technocrats and bureaucrats everywhere. We shouldn't have a problem with implementing our own policy. So I think the priority for them is first to get funding, and next to implement what they already have on paper. We don't need any new documents, just implement what we already have. So that's my take on their priorities.
Thank you. Rightly said, secure more funds and then implement what we have on paper. Because we see that we draft plans, we enact policies, do reforms, but then we don't implement. Dr. Davidson, what would you recommend that the new administration prioritize?
Okay, thank you very much, Nancy. So looking at what the new administration has released over the course of a few weeks, we've seen that there's a lot of, like Dr. Koya had rightly said, a lot of documents. And these documents have been harnessed from the finest of all, which are Nigerians. Actually, we have been very efficient when it comes to having plans, having goals, setting all of these documents. But when it comes to implementation, yeah, we are also struggling with that. But one other thing I've seen that we've struggled with is following through with implementation. And then also having monitoring tools in place. Now, there's a typical sad notion when it comes to feedbacks. Once a feedback is positive, we all embrace it. Once a feedback is negative, we want to shut it down. Then how do we learn? How do we grow? How do we improve on services? Now, this new administration, for me, I think priority should be given to not just the big institutions, but also to the primary healthcare, because the primary healthcare for me personally is like the backbone of health services. But should we say we should neglect every other tier of health service? No, we have so much to give, but then there's also another issue of micromanagement. People are not able to exhibit all of the what is expected of that role, because you have a lot of persons being interfering with what is on paper or what was agreed upon. So the government has to, one, provide the finances, two, also take care of not just the physical infrastructure, but also the human investments. If you've seen over the course of 5-10 years, they've had like massive brain drain. A lot of Nigerians, especially young doctors like us, like myself, and you find a lot of persons looking for greener pastures. And when my opinion was asked on that, I said, see, a person has a choice to be wherever they want to be. For those of us who are here, we have our own choices of staying back, but For everyone who has gone in search of something else for themselves and for the betterment of their family, there's freedom of choice. That's why we're in a democratic dispensation. But what do we do? Encourage people to be on board. Provide them with resources. Provide them with opportunities to expand their knowledge base. To provide them with at least the basic things. So for me, I think that's where I'm going to say, we hope, as the new policy agenda has said, renewed hope 2023. We need this present administration to not just come up with new policies. We have excellent policies. We have excellent manpower. We have excellent human resource who are willing, especially both here and in diaspora, people who have seen health services being run in other places, who are willing to come home and say, okay, how can we help? I think that's, for me, something that this new administration has to focus on. And secondly, there's also this thing that people do not get. And it's the fact that it's a lesson, personally, I think I learned from COVID. And during the COVID period, we saw that a lot of people were grounded. Then that's how much some persons who had the opportunity to have access to their desirable healthcare had to struggle with what was available. So if we haven't learned from that experience, then I think there's a long way to go. The administration has to look at things like that to say, how do we strengthen what is existing? How do we look at, how do we get feedbacks? How do we get reviews? How do we look at both the positive feedback and also the negative feedback? What are our takes from it? How can we improve on services? How can we improve on health-seeking behaviors? How can we look at advocacy? How can we look at community engagement, active community participation? And then also behavioral change, social behavioral change from both the citizens and also from the health workers. How can we harmonize what is already existing? There's so many parastatals when it comes to health. But the truth is, are they harmonized? Is a goal actually aimed at, or everybody just has his own policy and his own allocation and his own staff, and this one says I'm working for XYZ parastatal, this one says I'm working for ABC parastatal, and then we forget that it's service we're giving. These are positions that have been given to individuals to serve their community. So that's it on my own take.
Thank you for that. That was quite insightful. So I know that Dr. Oyeminde started with hitting some challenges, but I also want you to speak to some recurring challenges. What are those mistakes that you feel, okay, the previous administration, past governments keep making, and why should it be different this time? Just to word it better, there are some issues in the health sector that keeps recurring. Some say, okay, budgetary allocation, we don't hit the 15% as agreed, of course, in the Abuja declaration. We are coming to that aspect. But what would you say are the mistakes of previous administration, and for this new administration to avoid them entirely?
Well, I mean, I would like to say that, there is no, from me watching from outside, I'll say that I don't see a sense of urgency in implementation of those policies we talked about. When you don't implement policies in the health sector, that translates to pain, suffering and death in the population. So someone needs to let them know that you have to measure morbidity and mortality rates. You have to look at quality of life indices, they call them DALIs and CALIs. You have to measure all of this to know if your policies are working, or if you need to do more, or if you just do things faster. But sometimes you find that it's almost like people are so jaded, they're comfortable in their seats, and they can have 10, 20, 50 meetings about rolling out some policy. And they have a pilot for months. Well, when is the pilot going to be the real thing? So for me, that's one issue there, and it's a leadership problem. It's a leadership, if the leadership wants something to be implemented quickly, it's going to be implemented quickly. But if you are comfortable with them just having meetings upon meetings and stakeholder this, stakeholder that, and, unending pilot studies. No, we have to be able to give them a metric. I want 10% improvement or 20% improvement in primary healthcare access to cold chains or whatever it is we're trying to do. But we can't be doing perpetual pilots and meetings about policies. So that's one. Two, it's the motivation of health workers. Like Dr. Davidson said, people are migrating. We can't stop that because people have human rights and they don't have to stay in the, they can even stay in the country and not practice. There are a lot of doctors in Nigeria who are doing other things and not practicing medicine. So it's not just brain drain outside of the country, but there's internal brain drain where people just turn their nose on medicine and do something else. So the government needs to find a way to motivate health workers, all health workers, doctors, nurses, pharmacists, lab technicians, and so on, so that they can be happy to do their work again. We have all these incessant strikes. Today it's the resident doctors on strike, next it's the nurses on strike, next is laboratory tech on strike. Well, we cannot run a healthcare system when there are too many strikes going on. And if people are not motivated, then you cannot have quality care. So the new government has an opportunity now that they're new and people are still giving them the honeymoon period to bring doctors and other health workers together and help them, have them craft a policy or implement the policies they already have that will help stop these incessant strikes.
Thank you. Thank you so much. No sense of urgency when it comes to implementing existing policies and zero motivation on the part of healthcare workers. That is, that also speaks to human investment that Dr. Biobele mentioned earlier. One of the trendy issue now is the Jakba syndrome. Many doctors, not even in the health field or restricted to the health sector, but diverse sectors, we see talents traveling out of the country and, you know, using their skills for another nation. That's a very sad problem and it cuts across different sectors. So thank you so much, Dr. Oyerinde. Now, Dr. Davidson, what would you see as some of the strategies, you know, that the new government administration should improve on or should implement to improve access to quality healthcare? And I want you to speak particularly to those in the underserved areas, because we have people in, we have people that don't even receive healthcare. They don't even know that, oh, they are eligible to receive health services. Because why? Because they are in remote structures and you see a primary healthcare center that's just a small kiosk, you know, no doctor, bench, no roof, you know, in a very dilapidated state actually. But what are those strategies that the government should adopt to improve access of quality services to these underserved communities?
Okay, thank you, Nancy. So during one of our community mapping process, we found out that the community was visited and then people were receiving treatment under the tree. Now, in such communities, I've worked in some hard-to-reach areas in the earlier part of my career. And then I found out on one of our visits one time that people were reusing IV giving sets. It's something that is pitiful and something that one should not say outside. But that's because, one, the community is not even aware of what is existing in that place, one. Two, we've had engagements with some community-based organizations and they have shared stories of meeting some certain individuals who they wanted to provide services to but did not even know they had access to those services. So it's been said over and over again, but I hope, like Dr. Yerinde has said, well, the government is still in their honeymoon phase. I think I like that phrase. So they have to come back and say, okay, what can we do with our health system? I'm looking basically at not just one portion of it, but the health system in general. What are some of the needed infrastructure? Do you believe in this present day and time, you go to some facilities and you don't even have access to restrooms? Like, I have to give a sample of urine and I'm looking for like the nearest place to actually produce that sample. Some facilities will tell you they have access to public restrooms, and these restrooms are locked with keys. How are people supposed to have access to them? Just because, one, they do not have the manpower to go to the hygiene officers who go, or hygiene assistants who go and clean afterwards. So now you're looking at all of that. You're looking at considering fundings too. In some of these locations, a lot of persons can't afford the basics. We up here in the city, we can be able to say, okay, yeah, you know, I think I prefer XYZ hospital, I prefer ABC hospital. And that does not actually mean that because you're going to ABC hospital, you actually will have quality of care. So that's something that also has to be looked into. Now, we are looking at also client satisfaction survey. Budget itself is engaging community-based organizations, or has engaged community-based organizations, to go and give us feedback. We want to know how people... Now, it's not like let me state this. It's not a fault-finding mechanism. It is looking at what is existing and taking the bull by the horn and saying, how do we address some of these challenges? Now, engaging people in hard-to-reach areas, especially people who are not literate. I give you a sad example on some situations. Some persons are given medications and the leaflets are taken out of the drug because the hospital does not want you to go and buy the drug again. Those leaflets are put in for a reason, so that you can be able to read and then understand something. So some symptoms you're having, you can be able to say, okay, yeah, maybe this is normal, this is not normal. And then you know at what point in time you're going back to see your physician to say, okay, I'm not doing well on this medication, or I think I'm having an allergic reaction to this. I think I'm having a hypersensitive reaction to this. But some individuals will take off the leaflets and then just tell you, take two of what is the exact thing. So we need to have people come up to say, okay, we're getting to these hard to reach areas, and then we're interviewing, we're getting to talk to people, and we're putting faces, like a human angle context to these stories, to say, okay, these are how these people are treated, this is what is available to them, this is how much access they can get. And then, you know, also there's this misconception people have that, especially the primary healthcare, it's free of charge. It's government has paid for everything. And then you have somebody coming in and they're saying, no, you have to pay for XYZ. And this individual is saying, Vital government has paid for this. Now, also, you have something which is called, which Dr. Konya has said, and I don't think I'll hit on it again, is motivation of healthcare workers. Health service is a service to humanity, but bills also have to be paid, unfortunately. And then with the economy and with what's going on right now, you don't expect me to go to the filling station and say I'm a health worker and then I'm giving for free. No. So ensuring that people are not asking for so much. We health workers just want to be comfortable. They just want to be able to have the access to the basics. They just want to be able to, if I'm working like weekend calls, I should be able to say, okay, my family has provision for the period when I'm not around. Now, there's something that's also been done recently in some other countries. I'll give you an example, which is called community scorecards. These measures indices of how people receive treatment in the facility. We have a lot of facility scorecards. We have a lot of health facility scorecards. But the truth is, are they really capturing the real picture? That's also another open-ended question I'd leave to us. To just summarize what I've just said is, the quality of care and the demand for care has to be an urgent need, as has been said earlier. It also has to address a lot of factors in which these factors have been reoccurring over the period of time. As much as every Nigerian should have equal access to healthcare facilities, we have some persons who may not have that opportunity, may not be aware of such opportunities, and we need to make sure that everybody is on board. There should not be any form of I won't use the word discrimination, but there should be inclusivity at every stage in care. That's it on my end.
I'd like to add to that.
All right.
Yeah, so, and I want to do it at two different levels. One is to look at what government provides and what the private sector provides. So, like I said earlier, a place like Lagos or Abuja or Port Harcourt, you have plenty and plenty and plenty of doctors everywhere. Mostly in the private sector. Now, one thing that I think Nigeria needs to move away from in the 21st century is people converting residential flats into hospitals. So Nigeria needs to put more financial burden and regulatory burden on setting up hospitals so that only serious people who want to really invest in quality centers are able to set up hospitals. Okay? Now, if you then have, so a place like Lagos might have like just, I don't know, 10, 20 big hospitals. So when you say, oh, I'm delivering my baby, people can ask, oh, where? Whereas now, if you ask in Lagos, where did you deliver? There are like, I don't know, 10,000 different sites where you can give birth to a baby in Lagos. Well, how are you able to monitor quality of care when every street has one guy who opened a small clinic that he calls a hospital? So when we increase the cost of entry into the healthcare sector business for hospitals, then there are fewer people there that we can monitor effectively. On the other hand, we need to encourage doctors and other senior health workers to set up clinics. So in South Africa, they are called doctor's surgeries. In the Francophone West African countries, they're called cabinet. It's just a doctor and a nursing assistant, maybe a receptionist and a cleaner that run that 9 to 5 clinic, or 8 to 5 o'clock, or 8 to 6 o'clock, 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. clinic. So that gives, that brings primary health care services nearer the people, because then you can have your small clinic in Ikorodu, or you can have your small clinic in some village, and then you can drive there from the city to attend to your clinic every day and go back to the city. There's no admissions, but people get care. They can check their blood pressure there, they can do their antenatal care there, they can treat their wounds, they can get their vaccinations, they can get all kinds of services there, without having to travel to a big hospital, without having to travel, you know, without the additional cost of all that travel. And how much damage can you do in a clinic? So the level of quality surveillance that you need over a clinic is not that much compared to when you have people doing IV drugs, intravenous drugs, or giving blood transfusions in all this corner, two-bedroom flat hospitals all over the landscape. So that for me is one way that we can improve health services. First of all, improve quality of health services. At the same time, encourage more primary care services in the private sector. If you look back to some like 25 years ago, there were banks everywhere in Nigeria, all kinds of, every street had a bank. But the CBN came and said, no, you have to capitalize these banks. So the bigger banks bought over the smaller ones. So now we have fewer banks that are more likely to survive economic shocks. It's the same thing that we need to think about when we're looking at our healthcare system. Enough of all this, you know, private sector that's just opening hospitals everywhere, when we can consolidate them and make people invest in, you know, 10, 20 doctors can come together and invest in one huge hospital and run that. And then let other doctors who want to have their own little surgeries and cabinet can set them up as well. The other thing is that the government itself needs to look at primary health care in rural areas. You cannot get a doctor to work in a rural area if there's no power supply, there's no water supply, there's no security, there are no schools for their children. So we must have some kind of zone of development where when we put the primary health care there, we think of a school, we think of a residence for the doctors and nurses that will work there. We think of maybe a police station not far from them. So in the end, the doctor is secure, there's power supply, there's water supply. Well, if you have all of that, then your life is even better in that village than it is in the city where you have to put a keg in your car and look for water, or you have to, you know, really get gas or get petrol to run your generator. So we have to think of those kinds of zones of development in rural areas where we can put a doctor there, even just a youth corps, or the doctor that just post youth corps, might not mind to stay in a rural area. If there's light, there's power, there's water, there's security, you know, so, but you can't expect them to forgo all the amenities of life and go and sit down in a rural area without light, without water, without security. So these are the kinds of things that the new government needs to think about, that where are we going to place? Is it worth having a primary healthcare center in the middle of nowhere? No schools, no power supply, no water, and no security. If you can't provide all those things around the primary healthcare center, then just close it down. It's a waste.
Thank you so much. I have a follow-up question regarding setting up the clinic, you know, with a doctor and a nurse assistant, something that would give people care, maybe no admissions or stuff, just basic care. So would you recommend that being privatized? Because that also speaks to the reason why a primary healthcare center was established in the first place. It's just that in this case, primary healthcare centers have been neglected right now, and that is why they are in very, very bad and shabby condition, that people would not even want to go there. That is if they are even aware that there's a PHC around them. But this suggestion now, this recommendation that you've actually made, so should it be privatized? Should it be run strictly by a private, public-private setting, or just private, or government, which also speaks to the PHC that's on ground?
Right. So it's on two levels. One, if we make it more difficult to set up a hospital, so that means only fewer people are setting up hospitals, and many of these ones we're having are closing down, then we're going to have a lot of people who need to work elsewhere. So they're going to have to move from the urban area and move to semi-urban and rural areas. So if you collapse all the hospitals in Lagos into just about 20 or 30 of them, well, there'll be hundreds of doctors who would like to move to Badagry or move to Ikorodu or move to, I don't know, another Ogba or some place out of Lagos. And when they are there, if they also cannot set up a hospital there, but they can set up a cabinet, that would be a private sector run primary health center. Maybe we shouldn't call it a primary health center. It's a private sector run avenue to get primary health care. So you get the basic things you need that you get in any primary health care center, you can get it there. Of course, you can't do deliveries there, but you can get all the other things. You get the antenatal care, you can get your immunizations, you can get, check your blood pressure, you can do a little test or your fingertip test for diabetes, for a few other things, check for anemia and things like that. So you get your treatment for malaria, you can get all of those things done, treat wounds. Some basic surgeries can be done, day surgeries where you have lumps removed and, you know, things like that. Now, that's what most people need. Most people don't need to be admitted anywhere. Most people don't need surgeries. Most people don't need, you know, high-tech CAT scans and MRIs and things like that. So, and then if you're a doctor in a rural area with a little cabinet and you find somebody who needs an ultrasound, then you refer them to the city. Say, well, you need an ultrasound. It's not an emergency. You can get it done down the line just to figure out what this lump is. Okay, so they find time and go to the city. If it's an emergency, then you as a doctor there says, well, this is an emergency. We have to get you out immediately. This is how we're going to arrange an ambulance to move you or a transport to move you from this village to the city. And this is where you're going. But that's better than this person looking for money to go to the city and planning. And they're getting complicated before they finally get to the city, okay? And so each state, I think, will decide if they want to make it a public-private partnership, because if you want to encourage doctors to go and set up those kinds of little surgeries, the first few of those might be set up by the government and say, here are model surgeries. This is what we are asking you to set up. So the government might look for the most underserved areas and set up a couple of surgeries there and say, you come and run this. It cost us, I don't know, 10 million or 20 million to set this up. So we expect you to pay back over the next 5 years. Now, if we then also work on the insurance scheme, right, the National Health Insurance Scheme, now about 3% of the population are covered by the National Health Insurance in Nigeria. Well, this is a program that's been there for 30 years. Why are we having only 3% coverage? So now we need to go and look into that and make sure we can get up to about 90% coverage. In a place like Rwanda, it's about 90% coverage. And they began way decades after us. In Ghana, they're about 85% coverage. They began decades after us. So we can do it too, and we can do it rapidly if there's the political will to do it. If there's that sense of urgency to expand national health insurance coverage, we can do it rapidly. Now, if the insurance coverage is working, the insurance system can incentivize the surgeries to see people in the rural areas. Because if you get incentive pay for the, you know, for vaccinating all kids in the rural area, then you as a doctor in the rural area will go out into the rural area, get some, I don't know, keke napep with a loudspeaker, and you talk to people in the rural villages and bring all your kids for vaccination. Because you know the insurance will give you a top up of your income because you've vaccinated all the kids in that local area. But you see how if we don't work on financing, then we can't achieve every other thing we want to achieve. We need the health insurance system to be up and running. We need under that to put some quality metrics. So if the insurance is saying that, you know, this woman is coming 10 times for malaria in a year, then they'll ask you, the primary healthcare provider, either in the PHC, government PHC, or a private sector PHC, they're going to ask you, what's your problem? Why is this woman having malaria every time and you're not doing anything about it? Do you need to give her bed nets? Do you need to, you know, is there anything else? Maybe it's not even malaria you're treating. What exactly is wrong with this? So these are the kinds of ways in which different levers of the health system affect one and the other. And if we can't, if we don't, but I think the first thing is fix the finance structure correctly, and then we can use that to encourage the other parts of the system to work better. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Dr. Oyerinde. So we are wrapping up on the conversation. I just have one more question for both of you, and that speaks to the 15% Abuja declaration, you know, that was concluded in 2001. But it's unfortunate, which speaks to the political will that Oyerinde has mentioned now, if it's really a system problem we have. Because if countries that kicked off a health insurance scheme decades after we did ours are, you know, hitting threshold of 80%, 90%, and we are just merely at 3%. So what exactly is the problem? Is it a system problem, or we don't just have the will, or it's a political will and a leadership, leaders not having the will kind of problem? So I just, well, you can speak to that, but what is the issue? Because for instance, now 15% is supposed to go to the budget, but we barely have that. It's supposed to go to health from the budget, but we barely have that. So what would you say is the issue? Why is Nigeria not hitting or even getting so close, maybe like by 80 or 70%, so close to the threshold for health allocation? So let's have Dr. David Singh, then Dr. Oyerinde concludes.
Okay, thank you, Nancy. I'm just going to summarize everything you said in just a few words, which is, when people have options, they do not invest in what is needed. Now, you look at a lot of persons, they have, okay, I'll give you a sad example. I had a client or a patient, an individual who became my patient, and unfortunately, he was told he had some abnormal laboratory results and flew all the way to the UK to have that result checked. Now, for me, when he was narrating his ordeal, well, he has choice, he has his resources too, but I felt it was a waste of resource, and it was also a waste of his time when he could have just had a second opinion. Now, a lot of allocation to budgets regarding health has been undermined because the people who actually make these allocations, the people who are supposed to be implementing these allocations, are the ones who are actually going on medical tourisms and then blaming the average Nigerian for wanting to seek a greener pasture for his or herself. So, looking at the budget allocation, when we did a survey, we found very interesting facts, which made me realize that it's deeper than the surface. Some things are just put on paper, but then when it comes to real implementation, it's not the same way that which is done. Now, there's a lot. Like I said earlier, there's a lot that has to be done in addressing these things. And until we hold the people who are making these allocations accountable, we won't get our desired results as individuals. Now, accountability does not have to be in a violent form. Accountability does not have to be in a form that has to lead to destruction or disrespect or all of that. But when individuals sit on certain chairs and tables and then have round discussions and have reviews and have all of that, they should also know that there are people who hold them and there are people whose lives depend on these allocations and people who do not have the same options as they have. And as a public servant or as a civil servant, as we put it, there's supposed to be some form of priority when it comes to budgets and budget implementation. I don't know what this administration is going to go on with, how much you've seen, you had actually stated about how streetlights have prioritized over education and healthcare. So we hope that some of these challenges are addressed in the nearest future. And then with the cost of inflation, people have to, I remember sitting once in a hospital and where a man came into the facility and he said, I only have a particular amount of money. And I had written for his child to receive care. He brought the child as an emergency or as an outpatient, but it was something that needed admission. And from that experience, I looked up at this man and he said, Madam, take my phone. What was I going to do with his phone? And he said, hold the phone, let me go and look for the money. I had to stand up from my desk and walk up to the nurses and say, please, can you admit this child? And it was all hell broke loose. Oh, it's not a charitable organization. I understand that and I respect that. But this was a one-time favor I was asking from you to say, let's have this thing done. So when we look at such stories, when individuals come up to tell you about their experiences, you begin to wonder if the right thing or if there's something that is foundational that has not been addressed. So that's just my take. I think Dr. Koye will shed more light. For me, I can say vividly that the budget allocation, which is actually not sufficient when you look at other countries, even neighboring African countries too, who received independence much later, who had also experienced the same challenges, but had to sit down and say, how do we reform our services? Take, for example, Uganda. Even in the remote areas of Uganda, you will find a medical practitioner. Because one, you have electricity. Your cost of living is slightly affordable, even though they also have experienced brain drain. Look at Rwanda, look at our neighboring state, which is Ghana. And you're going to see like healthcare services have improved tremendously. Why are we having the same issues 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, 40 years later? And then instead of saying, okay, how do we address these things? We're beginning to not see the importance of, healthcare service until we become victims of something that we've left to the wind, which is unfortunate. So thank you, Nancy.
Thank you so much, Dr. Oyemide.
Yes, I mean, I want to second everything that Dr. Davidson said and to say that you have to look at healthcare financing. The 15% of GDP is what is recommended, the Abuja declaration. So even the Abuja, where it was declared, hasn't come close to meeting the 15% in more than 20 years since the declaration. So where's the political will? So that's one. Two, one of the ways the government needs to is to get money from the private sector into a national pool. So if you look at the traditional lives of people, you have Alajo in Lagos, you have the Esusus in southeastern parts of the country, where people contribute for their own businesses, right? They contribute pennies every day. I remember the Alajo that drives a motorbike and just goes into stalls in the market and collects, you know, who knows how much, 10 naira or 20 naira in those days. And then by the end of the month, somebody picks up that and spends it. Or somebody wants to invest in something, goes to the cooperative society and gets the money to invest in something or the other. Well, so those traditions are there that we are used to. That is what I think the health insurance scheme needs to lean on. That if you're a mechanic, you have to think about the healthcare of your team. Your healthcare, your team's healthcare, the healthcare of your children and their children. So now is your time to contribute daily or monthly, however you want to do it, and put it in a common pool. Maybe the Mechanics Association or the Artisans Association or the Bakers Association, Seamstress Association, the Yaloja of Lagos Association, but the pool should be for healthcare. And then that pool should then go into a center where it's all aggregated, right? So the pool from the bakers, the one from the mechanics, the one from artisans, the one from oil industry workers, the one from university professors. So when that pool comes together, then we have professional treasury people manage the money and grow it. But that's the fund that we are going to use for our healthcare. So when I then fall sick, because I've been contributing into that pool, I can access healthcare without having to look for money or have to give my phone to Dr. Davidson before my child is admitted. So that's the, we need to fix that so that everybody is covered by insurance one way or the other. If you are unemployed, then that's the government that's going to be paying your part of the pool. If you are retired, then the government is paying your part of the pool. If you work for an oil company, well, maybe you have so much, the company has so much money, and part of your benefit is that they are the one paying to that pool for you on your behalf. But if you are just a plumber somewhere or a carpenter somewhere, you pay into your association of artisans pool, and then they bring all of that money into a central pool where it is managed. That, for me, is the way we need to go for our healthcare in Nigeria. We need to finance it better, and then with additional funding from the federal government, with additional funding from donor organizations that are bringing money into Nigeria every day. The UN health agencies have some funds that we can also tap into. The World Bank has some funds we can tap into. By the time we do all of that, we should be able to get up to about 15% that we need for the healthcare system. But it takes leadership and it takes seriousness. We cannot do it just by hoping to waiting for the next subvention. It has to be someone looking out to raise money for healthcare in Nigeria. Part of that is the treasury officers who will be managing that pool. They have a chance to now grow the money, invest in stocks, invest in whatever they need to invest in. They know how to turn money around. And that's the way we are going to be able to provide adequate funding, motivate our health workers, incentivize quality of care, and then, of course, sanctions. So when things go wrong, we have to be able to sanction those who do bad. So if a doctor, consistently mistreats his patients, that doctor shouldn't be practicing anymore. So there has to be sanctions. So the medical council would do its part and withdraw a license from such a doctor. I think one other thing I'd like to mention before we round up is the issue of drugs and consumables. Here again, we need to professionalize that industry. If you go to the UK, you think of Boots, for example. Everywhere you have Boots. Well, they are the major retailer of pharmaceuticals in the UK. In the US, we have CVS, we have a couple of other Publix, and a couple of other drug companies. You can list them, like 10 of them on your hand. That's all we have. But they have branches everywhere. But if one of them, one branch messes up, the government might close down the entire, all the branches they have in the country or in the state. So there is a reason why there's a quality control officer, there's a compliance officer that goes to all the branches, make sure the drugs are well preserved, they have the right equipment to store the drugs, the quality of care is assured, the quality of the drugs are assured, right? Now we have in Nigeria people who have no business importing drugs, but because they have money and influence, they are importing drugs and supplies into the health system. This has to stop. So the issue of fake drugs and fake second-hand equipment and things like that that are messing up the healthcare system needs to stop. And that is by requiring higher level capitalization before you get into the industry. And then so we consolidate. So instead of having every shop the chemist, well, that needs to become more professional. We should professionalize it so that you might be branches of a big chain, but you have within that chain a whole structure of governance and compliance that makes sure that things are done properly at all levels of the chain.
Thank you so much. You guys have actually done justice to this segment. It's quite deeper than what it seems. We need more funds if we are to get to a particular threshold, and it takes seriousness and committed leadership as well to get the nation to that point. Thank you so much, Dr. Koye Oyerinde. Thank you for joining the conversation.
Thank you.
Yes, and Dr. Davidson, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure having you.
Thank you so much, and thank you very much, Chief. It was nice engaging with you.
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Davidson.
All right, thank you so much, Doctor. Dr. Koye Oyerinde is a pediatrician and health policy expert in the United States, and he has been sharing insights and making tangible contributions on things the new administration should prioritize. He mentioned some of the things he mentioned are more funding, because yes, Nigeria is yet to even achieve the 15% allocation for health from the budget, despite it's been over 20 years since that enactment was made. And there is also the issue of political will, leadership and seriousness. Dr. Koye was also joined by Dr. Biobele Davidson. She is budget strengthening health system leads, one of our finest. And yes, she also emphasized on human investment and providing resources. And of course, funding cannot be overemphasized. Yes, and that's it on this particular episode. Don't forget, you also can be a part of the conversation. It's open on our social media platform at BudgetNG across Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram using the hashtag What's Next Nigeria. You can specifically hone in on the What's Next series and, you know, be a part of the conversation. The first and second episode are, of course, open for you. You can go back, take a listen, and, you know, leave observations, comments, and questions when necessary, and we're going to attend to all of that. The What's Next series is continuing, so keep an eye out for what we're going to be discussing in the next episode. It's been a pleasure to host you. My name is Nancy. Do have a lovely day.